Just below his ribcage, where it clicked for a couple days after they'd been on the float for a while. Now it clicked and ached a little. Just time and age catching up with him. But it made him crazy. Probably anything that he couldn't fix was going to make him crazy right now. He walked down the tight hallway, his shoulder brushing the conduits and pipes, and told himself that things were getting better. Not losing Holden. That was still a long way from better. But the rest of it, the rest of them, whatever else happened, he still had Bobby. And for him, anyway, Bobby counted double. Taking care of their little family had been his job damn near since the day the Canterbury died, back in some other lifetime. And usually he felt like he managed it pretty well. The only time things had really come apart, he'd been married to Giselle, and preoccupied with trying to pump air into that leaking sack of a relationship. But all the times he hadn't lost focus, Alex felt like he'd kept the crew of the Rosie working together, mostly. It wasn't big things. The powerful stuff was always small. A kind word when Clarissa was feeling unappreciated. A little elbow in the ribs when Holden's outrage on someone else's behalf threatened to eclipse the person in question. A cordon around Amos when the big man was in the bad part of his head. Every crew that lasted more than three runs together had someone who kept a weather eye on the balance. For decades now, he'd been that man on the Rosie. Only they weren't on the Rosie now. And that, so far as he could see it, was more than half of the problem. Not the whole problem, but more than half.
"Hoi, hoi, hoi,"
one of Katria's people said, trotting up behind him. Alex recognized him from the galley, young guy with a nose that had gotten bent some time back and never put straight.
"Passe alles gut?"
"Sure," Alex said. "Everything's fine."
It wasn't true, but he wasn't looking to talk about family business outside the family.
"Bis bien,"
the crooked nose guy said.
"Just, we're alles busted about Holden, yeah? Whatever Voltaire can do, help out, yeah?"
Alex clapped the crook nose on the shoulder and looked deeply into his eyes.
"Thank you. Seriously. That means a lot."
The kid was just another someone who wanted to get close to the action. There had been a million like him over the years. Holden had always been the one who soaked up the fame and celebrity, because for the most part he didn't notice it. He just kept on being himself and got vaguely surprised when anyone recognized him. The rest of them had to build up their routines and diversions, ways of being polite to people who wanted to insert themselves into anything that the Rosinante did so they could tell their friends and feeds that they knew James Holden. Shaking Crooknose's hand and sending him away didn't cost Alex much, but it didn't cost him nothing. Part of him wanted to ignore the guy or yell at him, but this was easier in the long run. He had enough experience to know that, and he was pretty good with patience when he needed to be. After a well-calculated moment, he turned away and resumed walking toward the makeshift bunkroom. And Naomi. It had been hard when Holden and Naomi pulled the ripcord, but it hadn't been unexpected. Part of him had been braced for it since his own second divorce. He'd been ready for the blow, and those two packed up their things and retired. When Duarte's forces blew through the gate and changed everything, part of him had thought that getting Holden and Naomi back was going to be the silver lining. He'd called it wrong, though. They treated it like Laconia was the only problem because it was the one most likely to get them all killed. But there was more than that. Now that Holden was out of the picture, the only one in a position to fix it was Naomi. Fix it. That was optimism. The only one who could fix as much of it as was fixable. He hoped she was able to rise to the occasion. He hoped he was, too. But no matter how bad it was, things had gone pretty well with Bobby. He still had Bobby. The smuggler's cabin was dim. Golden light spilled from the toolkit light they used for illumination when the built-in fixtures were too harsh. The air was warmer here, and it had the vague smell of bodies and old laundry. They hadn't changed out the sheets since they'd gotten here. Some things slipped when you were hiding from authoritarian police squads and trying to topple a conquering army. Linens appeared to be one of those things. Naomi sat against the back wall. Her stool tipped back so that she could rest against the bulkhead. She smiled when he came in and put a finger to her lips. Alex paused, and Naomi nodded toward the bunk to his left. The lump under the blanket was the curve of Clarissa's back. It rose and fell slowly. She was asleep. Alex turned back to Naomi, gestured to the door behind him in invitation, but Naomi shifted her stool to one side, making room for Alex to sit on the lower bunk beside her. "Come sit with me. I will not go outside." With a sinking sensation in his gut, Alex sat. His back popped like a bolt shearing off, and the ache went away. In the shadows, Naomi seemed like someone just waking up from sleep, or just falling into it. On a borderline, regardless, between one state and another. "Hey," Alex said softly. Naomi made a little wave with a smile behind it. "I've been sitting here for the last couple hours. Amos is trying to get something to take the edge off in the short run, but we need to get her to the med bay. That sludge in her blood is building up. It's making her jittery." "As soon as we're out of here," Alex said, "first thing. How are you holding together?" She shrugged with her hands. "Yeah," he said. "You coming to tell me that I need to put my big girl boots on, stop sulking in my tent and rejoin the battle, quick before Patroclus does something rash?" There was a warmth and humor in her voice he hadn't expected. It almost undercut the sorrow that he had expected.
"Yeah, I don't actually know who Patroclus is," Alex said.
"Greek kid. Got in over his head," Naomi said, waving it away. "I'll be fine, Alex. I'll be out there. Just I needed to be away for a little while. It's just the down cycle." He went through all of the things he'd planned to say, all the arguments he'd prepared to make. None of them seemed to quite fit the situation.
"Yeah, okay," he said instead, and then, a moment later, "down cycle?"
"The part where I don't know if he's dead or alive. The part where I don't know if I'll ever see him again. The part where I think how much I want him to be here, and safe, and not hurting, and telling me not to hurt either."
"I know, that's gotta be..."
"Alex, I live here," Naomi said. "I can't tell you how many times he's put me here. How many times he's seen the right thing to do and rushed off to do it without thinking about the price. Without letting me or you or the Rosies scare him into being less than his conscience demands. He doesn't even know he's doing it. It's natural to him. Who he is. It's the only thing about him I'm really angry about." The buzz in her voice wasn't sorrow. Alex took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"I may not have really understood the whole situation.
You remember Io? When he went off to a ship with active protomolecule all over it because maybe he'd be able to save Mars? Or Illus, when he vanished with whatever that weird version of Miller was because maybe he'd be able to keep you and me from falling out of orbit? Or on Moraes, when he went into the cliffs so we wouldn't run out of water? So this time he went to keep Amos and Katria playing nice, and instead he saved the whole operation and maybe opened the way for all of us to get away safely. All it cost was him. And he paid that price without hesitating, same as fucking always." A tear tracked down her cheek, and he felt his own eyes stinging.
"We'll get him," Alex said. "We'll always get him back."
"Sure we will. Until the time we don't," she said. It's like this for everyone. There's always going to be a last time, eventually. I just wish with Jim there could only be one last time, and not all of them over and over and over. He took her hand. Her fingers were warm, but thinner than he remembered them being. He could feel the little bones beneath the skin, and her skin was dry. "He's exhausting," she said.
"But we love him,"
she sighed.
"We do."
They sat in silence for a moment before she drew her hand back from his and wiped her cheeks dry. She leaned forward, setting the legs of her stool down against the deck. Her sigh came from a thousand clicks away.
"Let me get cleaned up and I'll get to work," she said.
Alex stood when she did, but waited behind as she walked out. He'd been traveling with Naomi for a lot of years. It was amazing how easy it was to forget how much she knew herself. He didn't know if that said more about her or him. Probably him. Clarissa made a soft sound, somewhere between a grunt and cough. She turned toward him. Her skin was pale, sheened with sweat, but her smile was strong and unforced.
"Hey," she said. "What did I miss? Did we hear about Holden? What's news?"
"No, it wasn't that. I was just getting a little pep talk," Alex said. "How you doing?"
Clarissa's eyes drifted closed and then open again, like a blinking in slow motion.
"Living the dream?" she said and chuckled.
"Have you seen Amos? He was going to get me... something."
"I think he's still out doing that. He'll be back, though. Don't worry."
"I never do,"
Clarissa said and shuddered like she was cold.
The room wasn't cold.
"You think they could fix me?"
"Who?"
"The Laconians," Clarissa said. "I keep thinking about how their tech is all levels and levels above ours. And I wonder if maybe their medicine is, too. Maybe they could get these fucking implants out of me. Plaster over the worst of the damage."
"I don't know. Maybe."
"Kind of ironic that I'm working to fuck them all the way up, isn't it?" She made a single, low sound. If she'd strung a few like it together, it would have been chuckling.
"I guess it is," he said, and then a moment later, "if you want to go to one of their clinics, I mean, it would probably mean getting out of this underground business, but if you want to, we can work something out."
Her smile was love and pity.
"You really think that's true? That we could work something out?"
"Hell yes," Alex said.
"Well, I'll keep that option in mind," she said.
"You're a good man, Alex Kamal."
"You're not too bad yourself," he said.
"I am not presently at my best," Clarissa said, "but I appreciate the thought. I really do."
Her eyes fluttered closed again. Her face relaxed. She looked like a wax model of herself.
"She'll be better when we get the Rosie back," he thought. "Not better, just improved, but better than this."
And once he was back in the pilot's seat, he wasn't ever going dockside again if he could help it. Being on the Rocinante was being home. Everywhere else was where the trouble came. Bobby came with the news about Holden, and something else besides. It felt almost like something foreordained. As soon as he had told Naomi that they'd save Holden, Holden appeared in the station brig, and the document outlining how to free him fell into their hands. It was perfect enough to make him very nervous.
"This is astounding," Naomi said, paging through the file.
Alex leaned over her, trying to see the screen of her terminal and not interrupt her at the same time, and doing a middling job of both. If there was any sure sign of Naomi's relief, it was that she was back on the job. The room was small, the door firmly closed, and Saba had set the monitor to the local news feed with the volume high. A young man he didn't recognize was interviewing Carrie Fisk about the war and Sol system and the traffic between the colony worlds that was just about to begin. "The colonies don't care who's running Medina, so long as we're running it well. The transport union was fine, and Laconian oversight will be fine, too. Better, even, because the Laconian model respects self-rule. The Laconian Congress of Worlds is a real voice for its members. That's never been the case before." Alex tried watching her, just so he'd have something to do besides hover. It didn't work very well. Bobby paced along the wall behind her, three strides one way, then turned, then three back. Saba was more subdued, his body held still and only his eyes flickering. The two of them had the same sense of barely restrained action, like a boulder on a mountaintop that's just starting to shift toward the slope. Naomi made a small, satisfied sound at the back of her throat and followed a linked passage to a schematic of a ship that looked from the outside like the gathering storm.
"Who knows about this?" Alex asked. "I mean, who's seen it?"
"One of mine broke the encryption," Saba said. "She brought it to me straight. Didn't read it, even. Maha, she's solid like stone. Not everyone of mine is, but her. I tell her she didn't see it, and it never got seen."
"This has the operational plans for the gathering storm," Naomi said. "Whatever else you want to say about these Laconians, they are thorough.
Most of it's MRCN and MMC protocols and practices," Bobby said. 5/6 of it are the operating procedures Alex and I trained on, word for word."
"You should both read the thing then," Saba said. "Alisla. Mark down where it's changed. There's reasons to change things. Might point us the right way. Know what's behind it, maybe even better than this on its own."
"I don't know," Naomi said. "This on its own is pretty damn good." The excitement in Alex's chest felt like champagne bubbles, bright and dancing. He'd forgotten what a good break felt like after all the dread. It was astounding to think how close he'd come to scrubbing the mission, leaving the Waldos abandoned in the air duct and calling it impossible. And if this was the key that let them get themselves and everyone else in the underground off Medina before the typhoon appeared, his balking would have pissed their best chances away. Holden's gambit had worked. He'd thrown himself to the wolves so that they'd have this. And it was everything they'd hoped for. Everything but having him back. And maybe that too.
"Is there anything in there about where the prisoners are held?" he asked.
"There is," Naomi said, her inflection landing on the words in a way that meant it was the first thing she'd looked for. All the rest of it was important, but that part, where Holden was, how to get him out, was a settled issue in her mind. That was enough for Alex. He could hear the details later, so long as there were details to hear.
"Problema, son," Saba said, shifting his weight. "Maybe it's too good, yeah? Maybe it's designed to look like something it's not."
"You think it's fake?" Naomi asked. Saba made a ticking sound with his tongue and teeth.
"No, but can't make the assumption without risking everybody's ass, yeah? Hoping more than not. If it is what it is, it won't stay secret for long. Too proud of victory, yeah? Someone finds out, gets a little drunk, then everyone knows."
"You don't trust your people's discipline?" Bobby asked.
Saba pointed at the closed door.
"My people are the crew on the Malaclips. These others weren't mine until they stopped being drummers. And she's had 5 or 6 layers of bureaucrats between. It's not I don't trust. It's that I don't trust blind. People are people. Fucked up like we all are, it amazes me we can even make a sandwich."
"A man of infinite cynicism," Naomi said, but Alex could hear the calm behind the words. Whatever she was seeing there, it soothed her more than he'd been able to. And then, Bobby, when you were active Martian Marine Corps, did your Goliath suit have a command override?
A what?
Bobby said. Command override. Something that let your commanding officer shut the suit down.
Sure. We called it a radio.
CO said stand down, and we did.
What are you seeing?
Naomi leaned back so that Bobby, and, since he was right there, Alex, could see better. Back when he'd been in the service, there had always been a clear chain of command and procedures in place for when someone bucked it. Most of the time, it involved MPs dragging someone off for a little summary roadside attitude adjustment, followed by a court-martial. Maybe it was different in the Marines, but he was pretty sure he hadn't seen anything like what was outlined on the screen.
They can turn them off?
Bobby said, her voice caught between outrage and laughter. Because that right there looks like it's saying the governor can push a button and turn all those pretty suits of power armor into a couple thousand sarcophagi. Life support functions stay in place, Naomi said, but disables the weapons and comm systems and freezes all the joints. Alex whistled appreciatively.
These folks must really be scared of mutineers.
Well, Bobby said, think about how they got here. Duarte managed to build a schismatic faction inside the MCRN, big enough to start his own navy. Going on with the assumption that no one would ever try the same thing on him would seem stupid. He's not stupid. This solve in particular, though.
Seems a mite over-aggressive, Alex said.
And it's always the aggressor who exposes their weakness, Bobby said. She put her hand on Naomi's. What are the chances we could spoof that lockdown signal?
Get me one of their powered suits, Naomi said, and I'm pretty sure we could manage it.
The storm, Medina scopes, and the Marines, Bobby said. This looks like we can build a plan that's 3 for 3.
And the prisoners, Naomi said, freeing the prisoners.
She meant Holden, Alex knew. Bobby did too.
Goes without saying, Bobby said.
Chapter 38. Sing. Sing found it unsettling to think of a time before Laconia. He'd been young enough when his parents made the crossing that he had virtually no memories of anything but Laconia as home, and yet Laconia wasn't even the first of the 1300 worlds to be colonized. First, there had been a ball of mud and water that the settlers called Illus. The government of Earth, faced with the daunting prospect of surveying, studying, then exploiting the potentially vast riches of these new worlds, did what it always did. It gave out a government contract to a civilian company to do it for them. But when the prospecting vessel from Royal Charter Energy arrived at what the UN was calling New Terra, they found a couple hundred squatters already there, digging up mineral resources and calling themselves an independent government. A lot of violence later, RCE left the planet. Illus had its own charter from the UN, and it was, up until recently, a founding member of Carrie Fisk's Association of Worlds and an exporter of lithium and heavy metals. James Holden had been there during the worst of that initial violence. Now he was in an observation room with his ankles shackled to the deck. Singh considered the man on his monitor. Holden was older than he'd expected, his temples gone white. The images he'd pulled from the public archives going back decades showed that same open, serious-eyed face on a man very near Singh's own age. Now, Holden sat with his head bowed forward. Blood streaked the chest and sleeves of his prison uniform. Round drops of it spotted his paper slippers. He cradled one hand against his belly, and his cheek was swollen and bruised. The stool he sat on had a single leg bolted to the deck, and he swayed forward and back like a man nodding himself to sleep. The restraints on his wrists looked like wide black ribbon, but Singh knew they were strong enough that the man's bones would break before they did. He wasn't a person so much as a distillation of human misery. "Should I ask how many of those wounds came from the explosion?" Singh said. Overstreet didn't smile, but a subtle merriness came into his eyes. "If that's important to you, sir, I'm sure I could find out." After the prisoner had set off false alarms throughout the engineering deck, he had been captured. 5 minutes after, the real alarms had begun. In other circumstances, Holden would already be dead. All that had kept him alive until now was his connection to the mechanisms and people involved in his terrorist group, and his own stubbornness. But if this was going to work, Singh knew he would have to somehow reach this man, make a human connection with someone ready to kill Laconians out of prejudice and hatred. If he was going to find something that he could exploit, he had to believe there was good in him, even if he only maintained the illusion for a little while. If he could reframe Holden in his own mind, if he could see some other version of the man than the obvious one, it might be possible. He did warn people. The alarms before the detonation. They let more people get to safety. When he was taken, he warned the security forces to take shelter. If he hadn't done what he did, the loss of life would have been worse.
"That's true," Overstreet said. "He could also have chosen not to bomb the air supply."
What was this man? A patriot to his government? A man so frightened of change he'd resort to violence? A rabble-rouser who took Singh's governorship as another opportunity to start trouble that he would have been making under any circumstances? What he came back to, what he brought himself back to, was that point. Holden had let himself be captured in order to save lives. It wasn't much, but it was all Singh had.
"Well," he said, "let's see what happens."
Holden looked up as he entered the room. The older man's left eye was nearly shut, and his upper lip was split and scabby. He nodded to Singh as a guard brought a light chair for the governor to sit on.
"Captain Holden," Singh said, "I'm sorry we couldn't meet under better circumstances."
"Me too," Holden said. His voice was low and graveled. Singh had the sense that it wasn't always that way.
"Can I get you anything? A cup of water?"
"Coffee," Holden said. "I could stand a cup of coffee."
Singh tapped his wrist monitor, and a moment later the same guard re-entered with a bulb. Holden accepted it with both hands and sipped it. His smile seemed genuine.
"This is actually pretty good."
"I'm glad you approve. I'm more of a tea man myself."
"It'll do in a pinch," Holden said,
then lifted his gaze to meet Singh's. He had surprisingly clear and focused eyes, considering all he'd been through.
"Just to clarify, are you trying to build rapport with me, or am I trying to build rapport with you? I'm a little hazy on it."
"Both, I think," Singh said. "I haven't done this before. I'm a novice."
"Yeah, well, no offense, but you look like a teenager."
"I'm the same age you were when you were thrown out of Earth's Navy."
Holden laughed. It was a warm, rueful sound.
"I'm not sure you'll do yourself any favors comparing yourself to me back then. I was kind of an idiot."
Singh found it was easy to chuckle. He could imagine coming to like this man. That was good. It made the next part easier.
"So, why do you hate us, if you don't mind my asking?
You, personally,
I don't. But this conquistador bullshit? It's true, I don't think much of it. Singh leaned back in his chair, cocked his head. This is all a conversation about politics for you, then. It matters to you that much whose vision guides the government, no matter what that vision is. Not that academic, Holden said. I've spent a lot of years trying to get people to get along without anyone's boot being on anyone's neck. Your plan A is what I've spent a lifetime pushing against. Do you really think we're so bad? Look at what we've done, how we've done it. We haven't opened fire on a single ship that didn't attack us first. In all of history, when has a conqueror been able to say that? We have embraced local rule. Any of the colony worlds that submits can make their own local government, keep their own local customs, unless they conflict with your rules. Of course. Holden sipped his coffee. That's the thing. The people you're controlling don't have a voice in how you control them. As long as everyone's on the same page, things may be great, but when there's a question, you win, right? There has to be a way to come to a final decision. No, there doesn't. Every time someone starts talking about final anythings in politics, that means the atrocities are warming up. Humanity has done amazing things by just muddling through, arguing and complaining and fighting and negotiating. It's messy and undignified, but it's when we're at our best, because everyone gets to have a voice in it, even if everyone else is trying to shout it down. Whenever there's just one voice that matters, something terrible comes out of it. And yet, I understand from Miss Fisk that the transport union was condemning whole colonies that didn't follow its rule. Right? Holden said. And so, I disobeyed that order, and I quit working for them. I was all set to go retire in Sol System. Can you do that? Can I do what? If you are given an immoral order, can you resign and walk away? Because everything I've seen about how you're running this place tells me that isn't an option for you. Singh crossed his arms. He had the sense that the interrogation was getting away from him. The High Consul is a very wise, very thoughtful man, he said. I have perfect faith that... No, stop. Perfect faith really tells me everything I need to know, Holden said. You think this is a gentle, bloodless conquest, don't you? It is, to the degree that you allow it to be. I was there for the war Duarte started to cover his tracks. I was there for the starving years afterwards. Your empire's hands look a lot cleaner when you get to dictate where history begins and what parts of it don't count. So you and your friends decide instead, Singh said, trying to keep his tone light. You know that sooner or later you're going to tell us who they are. Holden took a long drink from the coffee cup and set it down gently on the floor beside his feet. I'm hoping for later, he said. But I see we're already done with the part where we make friendly with each other. Singh felt the warmth he'd cultivated toward Holden slipping away into frustration. He'd started in too quickly. He should have spent more time building up the relationship, and now they'd both fallen into adversarial stances with each other. It was time to change tack. Tell me what you can, Singh said, about Illis. Holden frowned, but not angrily. What do you want to know? Singh waited without answering. Holden shrugged. All right. It was the first contested colony. I went out there to try to mediate between the different claimants, and it all pretty much turned to shit. People shooting each other. Odd artifacts coming to life and blowing up the ocean. local ecosystem trying to mine us for fresh water. And there were death slugs. It wasn't great.
Artifacts coming to life?
Yeah, Holden said, shifting on his little stool. We had a trace of active protomolecule on the ship. We didn't know about it. It was trying to report in about the Sol Gate being complete, but everything it wanted to report to was dead or turned off. So it started turning things on. Only part of it was this guy I used to know, and it's kind of a weird story.
Why do you want to know about Illus?
What about the other artifact?
Holden shook his head, opened his hands.
What other artifact? Singh pulled up the image from the Tempest on his monitor. A bright, black nothingness. He enlarged it and held it out for Holden to see.
Yeah, the bullet, Holden said.
It was the thing that turned everything off again. Deactivated the protomolecule. Singh felt a chill in his heart. The calmness and innocence of the way Holden said the words was deeper than any threat.
It did what?
The guy I used to know? The dead one? He was a detective, and it was using him to look for where to report in. Only he, the reconstructed version of him, noticed that there was this place that killed off protomolecule activity. He said it was like a bullet that someone had fired to kill off the civilization. That. Bring that where I can see it better.
Singh enlarged the image.
Holden blinked. The weariness seemed to fall away from him, the pain of his injuries forgotten. When he spoke, his voice had a firmness and command Singh hadn't heard there before.
That's not Illus.
Where is that?
It appeared in Sol system, on one of our ships.
Oh, fuck that, Holden said. All right, listen. There's a woman you need to find. Her name's Elvi Okoye. She was a scientist on Illus. I don't know where she is now, but she spent years researching the artifacts there, including that one. She went through it.
Went through it to where?
Not like a door. Like she carried part of the protomolecule's network into it, and it killed off the sample, turned it all inert. And she said it turned hers sort of off while it did.
Turned her off? Like she lost consciousness? Singh said.
Lost time?
Something like that, Holden said.
I don't know. I didn't go through it. But I did see the thing on the station. I saw what happened to them.
Singh found he was leaning forward. His blood felt like it was fizzing. And what was more, he saw the same feelings echoed in Holden's battered face.
There was a station on Illus? He asked.
No, the one here. The station that controls the ring space.
The first time anyone came through the ring, that same dead guy took me to the station. It was part of how the rings turned on. But I saw things there, like a record of the old civilization. My friend, the dead guy, was looking through it for something, and because he was using me to do it, I saw it all too. Whatever made this, all of this, they were wiped out a long time before you and me got here. Billions of years, maybe. I saw whole systems going dark. I saw them trying to stop it by burning away entire solar systems, and it didn't work. Whatever they tried to do, it failed. And they were all just wiped away, with just their roads and their old machines left for us to stumble across.
That thing that showed up on your ship?
That's them. The other them. That's the thing that killed everything before Mars and Earth were part of the Gate Network.
But why would it appear now?
Holden choked on a laugh.
Well, I don't know.
Have you people been doing anything different recently?
Singh felt a little stab of embarrassment. It was a fair point. For the first time, the Tempest had employed the magnetic field generator in an uncontrolled environment, both here and in Sol System. Maybe this was a side effect, or something else about the battleships built on the platforms, or...
Look, Holden said, you and me, we're not friends. We aren't going to be friends. I will oppose you and your empire to my dying breath. But right now, none of that matters. Whatever built the gates and the protomolecule and all these ruins we're living in, they were wiped out. And the thing that wiped them out just took a shot at you.
Singh couldn't sleep that night. He was exhausted. But whenever he closed his eyes, Holden was there, squinting through his injured eyes, pointing with his broken hand. And the enigma of the bullet, the threat and mystery it represented. They defied him to sleep. In the middle of his sleep shift, he gave up, put on a robe, and ordered a pot of tea delivered from the commissary. When it arrived, he was already searching through the station records for other documentation of Holden's ravings. He was hoping to find something to suggest that the man was either insane or playing a game to deflect attention from his terrorism. But file after file, report after report, confirmed him. Even when there was no other witness to what he'd seen, there was at least a history to show that his claims had been consistent. It would have been so much easier if James Holden were only a madman.
Your empire's hands look a lot cleaner when you get to dictate where history begins and what parts of it don't count.
He knew the story of Laconia's founding. He'd been there for it, though he'd been a child at the time. The gates to the 1300 worlds had opened, and the probes had gone through. They brought back reports of the different systems, the stars and planets, and the stranger things that they'd seen. All humanity had seen the opportunity of new lands, of new worlds to inhabit. But alone of them all, Winston Duarte had recognized the terrible danger that expansion would bring. The chaos and violence as humanity pressed out past the limits of civilization. The choke point of the slow zone, and the endless wars it would generate. The unanticipated environmental collapses made worse by the lack of a central response, and he alone had the will to solve the problem. From among all the planets on the far sides of the gates, he chose Laconia because of the orbital construction platforms. He found the live culture of the protomolecule that he could use to harness Laconia's power. He found Dr. Cortasar to lead the research and development. And he took a third of the Martian Navy as the seed that would grow to become the world tree. The fraction of humanity that would rebuild on Laconia and come forth to bring order to humanity's chaos. To bring the peace that would last forever. The end of all wars. Singh doubted none of it. Holden's version wasn't incompatible, even if it chose a different emphasis. Holden himself had used the protomolecule on Illus, or been used by it, to turn on the ancient mechanisms. Only he had done it haphazardly, and with terrible results. Duarte had done it carefully, and to glorious effect. He sipped his tea. It hadn't quite gone cold, but it wasn't as warm as he'd expected. Holden was a problem. He was the key to breaking the terrorist network on Medina. He was also the key to the mystery of the thing that had appeared on the Tempest. His was the only report on the visions from the Ring Station. He was singular in all humanity
because he'd bumbled into being in so many of the right places at so many of the right times. If there was one thing Laconia's history taught, it was the power of the right person at the right moment. Singh had always known that the history of Laconia and the history of Sol System were connected. He'd never felt those common roots more deeply than now. The sense that his world and Holden's were part of a single, much vaster story. The makers of the protomolecule were also a part of that larger frame. The things that had killed them and then vanished. The things that had returned. Chapter 39. Amos. I was thinking about the recyclers, Peaches said. She sounded tired. She always sounded a little tired, but this was more.
Yeah?
He said. They were alone in the bunk. She was sitting up, paring her toenails with a little knife he'd found for her. Something about her meds made them thicker and yellow. He knew it was important to her to keep them short, even though she never said anything. His hands imagined what it would feel like to snap her neck. The tension first, then the grinding feeling of cartilage ripping as it gave way. He saw the look of betrayal in her eyes as the life went out of them. It was as clear as if he'd actually done it. The returns aren't as good as they ought to be, she said. We've been able to get 88-90% recovery, but I don't think we broke 85 on the freehold run.
Worth looking at, Amos said. You got any suspects?
I want to take a look at the water filters. I know they're supposed to be the best there is without retrofitting to a straight gel system, but I don't think they're doing what's on the label. He closed his eyes, and the Rocinante's recycling system appeared in his mind. If the filters were underperforming, yeah, could throw off the pressure going into the recyclers. Might be enough to drop the reclamation percentages. He pictured what else it would do.
We should take a peek at the feed lines, he said.
Look for a distension, she said. He grunted. Peaches scowled and nodded once, the way she did when they'd come to an agreement. There were still a few things about the Rosie that he knew better than she did, but those were few and far between. And mostly about the weapons systems. She didn't like those, and it had an effect on how much he thought about them. There were conversations he had with her that he couldn't have with anybody else. That didn't keep the thoughts from coming. It didn't do anything about the thing in his throat. You think Holden's okay? She asked.
Is or isn't, Amos said.
The thing in his throat got a little bigger, a little tighter. He wasn't sure why. I wish there was something more I could do, she said.
Naomi'll come up with something. Whatever needs doing, we'll do it.
She finished the last nail and tossed him the knife. He caught it in the air, folded it closed, and put it under his pillow where it would stay. Peaches got another couple of her pills and swallowed them dry, then lay back on her bunk. There wasn't room enough between her bunk and the one above her to get a decent punch going, but he knew what it would feel like to do a straight kick to her ribs. Or her head. Push her back against the bulkhead, then the next kicks she wouldn't be able to avoid. He wasn't going to do it, but the thoughts came anyway.
You need some sleep?
He asked. Little.
You should try to eat some afterward.
I'm not keeping much down right now.
That's why they call it try, he said. Worst case, just smear it around your face like a little kid. Absorb some nutrients through your skin.
She chuckled. You talk me into it, big guy. After I rest.
I'm going to get a jump on it, he said. You need anything, you just say it.
Thank you, Peaches said. He made his way down toward the galley, his shoulders brushing against the conduit and pipes on both sides. In the galley, one of Saba's people was drinking a cup of coffee. Nice-looking guy. Always been pleasant. The thing in his throat moved a little, and Amos felt the coffee cup slamming into the other guy's face, the edge of the cup folding against the guy's upper lip, the coffee burning them both. He felt what it would be like bending him back, trapping his legs under the table so he couldn't writhe away, pulling until his back snapped. There'd be others by then, the guy's friends. He thought about how to kill them, too. Amos smiled amiably and nodded. The guy nodded back. Amos got a bowl of oatmeal and honey flavoring. He sat by himself to eat. The Saba's guy finished his drink and walked away. There was a moment when his back was turned. Amos felt his own foot driving into the back of the man's knee, knocking him forward and down where he'd be in the right place for a chokehold. Amos only sighed and took another spoonful of grain mush. The stuff in the roasty was better, but this was warm anyway. It soothed his throat. "Hey there, big guy," Babs said from the doorway. She stepped over, sat across from him. Her jaw was set and her gaze was firm and straight ahead, looking right at him like she was playing at being Holden. "Got a minute?" Amos took his half-empty bowl, dropped the spoon in it, and threw them all away as he walked out the door. There was an environmental control station about 7 doors down. Saba had been using it to store food, but they'd all been eating at a pretty fair clip, and it was mostly empty space now. Only one entrance, so no one spent much time there. Thick walls filled with insulation foam, the kind that just ate up sound like it was nothing. If the Laconians came, it was a death trap. He shouldered the door open. Bab's footsteps came from behind him, hard and fast and authoritative, like a school teacher about to chew out her students. The room was dark, but he found the switch. 2 bright utility lights. They were down to half a pallet of textured protein and some tubs of grain and yeast. The walls were all steel plate except for a patch in one corner where they'd used carbon silicate lace. A pipe ran along the corner where the ceiling met the left wall. The actual environmental controls were all in locked cabinets and behind security doors that would take a crowbar, a welding torch, and a couple hours to get through. The whole place was maybe 3 meters by 4 and a couple high. It wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good. He didn't have any place better. Bab stepped in behind him and closed the door. Her nose had the 2 little half-moons beside the nostrils that she got when she was pissed. The thing in his throat throbbed like a tumor. For a second, he thought it was maybe going to rupture. Babs crossed her arms, blocking the door. "Look, Amos, I understand you're pissed off at me. And honest to God, I'm more than a little pissed off at you right now, too. But we're crew. We're friends, and we can work this out, whatever it is. I'm here, okay? So, whatever it is..." "When did you turn into such a fucking pussy, Babs?" he said. His hands were tingling like they had too much energy in them, like he was about to ground out. "Did you really come in here to talk about your feelings?" Her face went blank, her eyes flat. She uncrossed her arms. Her weight sunk into her hips. Her knees bent a little. He figured she was good for maybe 1 or 2 more rounds of insults, but he'd gauged wrong. She shifted her shoulders, swung at the hips, her right arm unfurling. A few years earlier, he might have been able to slip it and get inside, but a few years earlier, she might have been faster. Either way, all he managed was to turn his head away and pull back a couple centimeters before her knuckles slapped into his cheekbone. If he'd been slower, it would have splashed his nose across his face. Her next punch was already coming, and he turned so that it got his shoulder at an angle. The pain was sudden and wide and familiar as an old song. He felt this thing in his throat, blowing up like a balloon, expanding out bigger than he was. He kicked straight, hitting just above her hip with his knees still bent. It wasn't to break her, but to push her back. Then, with the room he'd opened between them, he rushed her. Right fist to her face, left swinging up into her ribs. She lifted her arms into a boxer's stance, but a fraction of a second too late. He finally got inside her guard, his right elbow across her throat, and he had her back against the door, pushing against her windpipe. She shifted under him, looking for a way to get a breath. His legs and back ached with the effort of closing her throat for her. He gritted his teeth until they creaked. The pain in his balls started with a thump, like hearing someone drop a brick. Then a second later the brightness came, spreading out through his whole body. He felt himself stumble back. Bobby turned out from under his arm, hitting him once with each fist on exactly the same rib. He felt it give. She wasn't pulling her punches. She meant it. He let go of the last shred of restraint and surged forward, roaring, ready to kill or get killed. The tiny part of him that was still watching him, still thinking and aware, expected her to flinch back. Instead, she jumped in toward him. They hit like a wreck, her hand on his neck, her hip against his, and he was in the air. He hit the bulkhead hard enough that sound faded away for a second. He pushed off just as she swung a knee into his gut, grabbed her around the thigh and lifted, swinging her up over his head, and then both of them down to the deck as hard as the spin gravity would take them. Someone was shouting, and it might have been him. It was all ground game now, and her hands were on his head, fingertips digging into his skin, looking for a grip. If she got his ear, she was keeping it. He reared back, grabbing for her arm, trying to get her elbow where he could bend it back, snap it. For a second he was almost there. But she twisted, got a foot against his waist, pushed him back. He caught her ankle and tried the same move on her knee, but the muscles there were too strong, the joint too solid to break. And while he was trying it, he couldn't move as well. Her other heel came down on his left eyebrow, popping it open. He pushed in toward her, driving her back. The blood stung his eye, but he moved fast and with a lifetime of practice. He had his hands around her throat, squeezing as hard as he could. Her windpipe was between his thumbs where he could crack it like a walnut. Except she was already bringing her arms up inside his, rolling her shoulders and shrugging off his grip. She'd planned it. She wasn't lost in a rage haze. She was still thinking. She locked her legs with his and rolled so she was on top. The heel of her left hand pushed his chin up and away so her right fist could land on his throat. Amos coughed, tried to roll away. His breath was a thick wheeze. The air that made it into his lungs felt pressed thin. He struggled to get to his feet, but she was already up, kicking his knee out from under him. He hit the deck hard. She was over him, kicking down, curb-stomping him. He tried to curl away from her. Her heel hit his shoulder, his back. She was going for his kidneys, and he tried to shift away, but he couldn't. The pain was exquisite and vast. He was helpless. He was fucked. She kicked him again, the whole weight of her body behind it, and he felt another rib go. He wasn't going to make it up. The violence was going to go on until she decided it was over, and there was nothing he could do to make it stop. He curled against blow after blow after blow, felt the damage in his body getting deeper. There was nothing he could do to defend himself. If Bobby wanted him dead, he'd die. He endured, helpless. The pain smeared into itself until it wasn't any part of him that hurt, until it was bigger than his body. His mind slipped, shifted. Images flickered through him like a memory too deep to bother being coherent. A perfume